Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Theatre Pitch podcast. This is Joe.
Heya.
And this is Sean. It's an audio podcast, Sean. So the voice, or are you representing a demographic tonight?
I am representing myself.
Oh, good.
And guys, as myself, I would like to say hello and welcome to the podcast.
Fantastic. Thank you for that wonderful introduction, Sean. My name is Jem, and this is the Theatre Pitch podcast, the podcast where we take a random online encyclopedia or article, and we smush it, but we don't smush it yet. What we do is we take it and pitch it as how we would turn it into a theatre show, and then at the end of all three of our pitches, we then smush those pitches and try to come out with the ultra mega, the big one. I tried to get really clever with words and be like, Megatron, dear. And my mouth decided to quit on that really bad joke before it had a chance to not be funny. So, this week's article, Joe, do you want to introduce the audience to what you are talking about and what we are talking about?
Well, this week we are talking about John Shabir. John Shabir was a British Tory political satirist who lived from 1709 to 1788. Eldest son of an attorney in Bidford, Devonshire. What's Devonshire? Devonshire.
See? It's where catching. His...
This is even different because you were coming up with those words. I've got them in front of me and I still screwed it up.
Letters.
Yeah. He was born to a family who owned land in Devonshire, where a village and a hundred were named after his family.
Mm-hmm.
And he went on to write political satire, along with many other things. He has an interesting life that I don't think I can do justice to in this shorter time.
Just go read the article. It's a trip.
Oh, it's rare that I actually would agree and just say, yeah, like, I don't even know if we could do a theatre show better than just saying, read this article.
Just sit down and have a read. How did you find the article, Sean?
Yeah, I've got an idea. It's very loosely based. I've got an idea. I'm pushing it a little bit about it being connected. But you know what? I don't care. I feel like I've smashed it 2 weeks in a row. I feel like I'm allowed a dud.
Okay. Joe, how did you feel about pitching for this idea and this show?
Well, as you know, I've thought long and hard about what to do for this.
Mm-hmm.
And I think after a lot of soul searching, I'm totally convinced my idea is real and great.
Oh, okay. Well, I really like my idea, and I'm convinced that I actually might just do it, because why not? So who wants to go first?
Can I go first?
Sure.
Sean, yes.
You can really...
Is this one where you want to just get yours out of the way or something?
Yeah. I suggest the going first usually means that I'm not confident in this whatsoever.
And considering last week, it was one of those when I turned around and go, I don't know what I'm doing. It was like, then you're going first. I think we should keep that as the tradition. Is we won't flip a coin. We'll just see who's least confident.
Yeah. So you know you guys. You guys, you know, the writers. You love a narrative. You love a narrative where I like visuals and concepts. So keep that in mind. The article, like you said, is great. My favourite line of the article is that, you know when Wikipedia, like, articles about, like, people from, like, hundreds of years ago, they're very vague and very, like, factual, sort of, like, Stephen went here, and then he done this, and then in this time he moved to this place, and then a factory opened. My favourite line of this
I think is I that, know which one it is, and I think it's my favourite one, too.
He married young and unhappy. It's like... Such a baller move that Wikipedia is like, we are so sure he was unhappy in marriage, we're putting it in.
Yeah.
Such a good...
It's a bold move.
It's literally the first line in the section called family.
And that section's really quite small.
Right. So my idea. He was born 1709 and he lived until 1788. The 18th century, yeah?
Yeah.
Blackadder the Third is set in the 18th century. Yes.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. He's a Tory political satirist. Have I said that right?
Satirist.
Yeah. Might edit that out. So my idea is I'm going to take the sort of idea of Blackadder the Third, you know, where, you know, you've got this crazy person as the head of state and he's doing crazy stuff and like the commoners having to put up with it. But I'm going to use that setting, but the scenario is basically every single thing Boris Johnson has done in like the past 2 years. in that concept, and sort of like crank up the ridiculousness a tiny bit so it's more theatrical.
Do you really have to crank up the
You
ridiculous?
Don't have to crank it up. That cranking it up was a bit sarcastic. Literally do it how he says it at parliaments.
It's verbatim
PMQs. That's my idea, really, is that I'm sort of doing, that's what he was. You know, if he was alive today, I bet he'd be having a field day. So I'm going to be using the unfamiliar time period of the 1800s and placing these real world scenarios that we're having to put up with now in that scenario. And that's why I was thinking, oh, Blackadder the Third, that's basically what I've done. That on stage with, you know, with Boris, with Priti Patel, with Liz Truss, with the stupid one. Which
that,
one am
that
I on
really
about?
Doesn't narrow it down.
You know, I just love...
And I'm sure
you're
aware of that.
And then, obviously, I don't know who to put as Blackadder, because Blackadder's like, he's the straight man. He's the everyday man that's like, that knows that these people in power are stupid. Don't know who that is. But I know that I'd want Dominic Cummings as Baldrick.
Yeah, okay.
That's my idea.
Is like the Labour Party going to feature at all? Like, is there going to be the Keir Starmer or the Jeremy Corbyn figure? Or is it just going to be our wonderful government that is in power
no,
today?
No, they're not going to be in it whatsoever, because I'm doing real world scenarios and I'm yet to see the opposition do anything.
It's funny because it's true. I'm just looking up all of the characters that are in Blackadder.
What's his name? Ian Blackford might pop up every now and then to call someone a liar and then be ushered out.
Yeah, because, oh my gosh. I like it. I think it's tongue-in-cheek. I think it's exactly what John would have done if he was doing it now, you know.
I was there thinking, John? Who's she on about? And then I was like, oh yeah, John.
The
oh,
dude.
Yeah, John.
The
oh,
Wikipedia yeah, the dude, article, the dude.
Yeah.
Dude.
That's my idea,
guys.
Yeah,
our guy.
Yeah, I like it. Joe, you are the person who, like, that would be up the alley for. Would you go see it?
I probably would, yeah. I've seen enough kind of, like, things that have been taking modern day stylings or it was a few years ago at the Fringe I saw a show, I can't remember its name now, but it was taking like the styling of a kind of a Jacobean farce but also applying it to the plot of a blaxploitation film.
Okay.
And that worked weirdly well. So I can see this being good, yeah.
Yeah, cool.
It's a fringe show. Cheers, Joe. That's what it is. It's a fringe show.
Like it.
Yeah.
Cool. I like your idea, Sean.
Oh, we started again. We're back, Joe.
We're back now.
We're back.
We're back in the podcast.
I really like that, actually, Sean.
Thank you.
Cool. Joe.
See, even when I have a shit idea, people will still come and watch it.
I mean, so, Joe's right. It's inherently fringe, so.
Yeah.
And it's fringe.
So, yeah, I was saying to Sean in the gap that may or may not exist, but now has to because I've said it. I was saying to Sean that I've also taken a similar approach with this, which is I've kind of based it off one sentence that interested me, which is in 1752, he went to Paris where he claimed to have obtained a medical degree. And to have been elected member of the Academy of Sciences.
Yes. This.
I love the fact that it follows up on this in no way whatsoever, but just that it doesn't even show any evidence that he did collect this medical degree, only that he claimed to have it.
But he is referred to, from that point in the article onwards, as Dr. John.
Yep.
I loved that sentence. That's my favourite sentence in the whole article.
But yeah, I will say that this was that I do think he married young and happily does challenge it for best sentence.
Yes, that came in second
best. Shortly after this time, he would go on to write, it's quoted down here as one of his earliest works was a book titled A Love Epistle in Verse Found at Paris that was reissued shortly afterwards, but when I looked up the full title of it, just gonna have to give me a moment to make sure I get this fully right, but is in fact, A Love Epistle in Verse Found at Paris in the cell of an Irish Carthusian after his death and sent to the Right Honourable R.T. Esquire by Monsieur M.R.V.X. Now, I think the fact that this is bringing in already the idea of this being a book found in prison, of what I want to do is essentially do... I like when you see things that are like biographical plays or films that don't try to tell the entire life of a person, but focus on one time.
Yeah.
And so I want to focus on the idea of his years in Paris. And in my mind, we can... you know what? Screw it. We've already brought up the idea of libel and slander. I don't think I can be too defamatory to a man who's been dead for over 200 years.
Yeah.
If he wants to sue me, fine. Come at me, John's ghost. So my play is about, it's essentially kind of taking like a kind of mock Edwardian farce in styling, but it's about a writer who has somehow found himself claiming to be a master physician, who moves to Paris, and the way that this small borough of Paris, all the people of this borough, their lives get turned on their head by the arrival of this con man claiming to be a doctor. Kind of thinking styling like, have either of you two seen One Man, Two Governors?
A long time ago.
Yeah, but, or indeed the play that it draws its roots from, A Servant of Two Masters. But you know that sort of styling where it's like, high, fast-paced, like, high-spirits, farcical comedy where it's all about, like, mistaken identities and people falling in love and confusions. And at the centre of it is this character of this writer who has somehow found himself writing himself into the character of a doctor, despite the fact that he doesn't know anything about medicine. And bodies are piling up as he fails to treat people, and everything's going to hell. And yeah, that's the idea.
I really like that. In my head, the opening scene is like him going to Paris, and like someone in French saying, "Oh, we need a doctor. Are you a doctor?" And him not knowing French just goes, "Wee wee, wee wee." And that's how it starts.
I just like that, like the idea that this is basically two of Hugh Laurie's greatest works put together, where it's House, but the bodies are just piling up, and he's like, "But no," and just occasionally hits somebody with a cane.
Yeah, in reference to that, like, all of his cures will be House style, where he just kind of ignores any medical professional's advice.
He's not going to do the tests to confirm what he thinks it is. He's just going to treat it.
He has decided his way of gaining these people's confidence is to disprove everyone else while having
lies.
No facts to prove himself.
And shouting, "Everybody lies." But he's just going to shout. That's the only phrase he can shout in French.
When you were first describing it, I was like, is this Mrs. Doubtfire?
I mean, what is Mrs. Doubtfire if not also just a comedy of errors in its own way?
I like it, Joe. I'd watch it.
I'd watch it.
Joe, what's your regional theatre?
Yeah.
Well, I haven't actually thought of one, to be honest. I think I've already done Liverpool Everyman Theatre.
I think you've got to put it somewhere like where the Cambridge Footlights played.
Yeah. I think I'm actually going to go for, this is going to be played at the Hare and Hounds in Birmingham.
Okay.
It's normally a gig venue, but it's just the first venue I thought of.
Fair enough.
It's a good venue. Shout out the Hare and Hounds.
Cool. All right. So you guys have both... Go on.
I just wanted to say, can I ask, were either of you surprised that, considering what we had this week and considering my t-shirt choice for the day, that I didn't even mention that he was a Tory?
I feel like you've been taken over by the bots, but I'm gonna ignore that for the bit so that they don't come for me.
Though it is of course important to at this point remind you all that Tories at this time were a very different party to the modern Conservatives, and that in their own way they were a more progressive party than the modern Conservatives.
Well, in
end
a lot
of lecture.
Of end of lecture. Great. Well done. I'm really proud of you for like not just going with the obvious and going with your instincts and going with something that sounds like it's hilarious. And that you can easily like sell and just by saying it's House, but how it would really go.
And in French.
And in French. Yes, exactly. I love it. Okay. Well, you both have pitched like really funny shows, and Hugh Laurie. So I'm going to come in here and pitch something that's not. So when I was reading this article, my jaw, when your jaw drops and then the next sentence is like even more what? So your jaw drops more and eventually you're like, no, this is insane. It read kind of like, the TV series that David Tennant did years ago before Doctor Who, Casanova, where it was like, it felt like it was this guy, it's like it was told from John's perspective when he was 85 and decrepit and like trying to woo a young woman by like telling her of all of these escapades, or all of his mates drunk in a pub kind of thing where it's all quite glorified. But I couldn't, claimed to have a medical degree. I've just written that in my notes. So I was kind of like, there are so many stories in here that are hilarious, but they're short stories. and they're wonderful. They're wonderful little scenes, and there doesn't seem to be too much of a coherent narrative. And so I was also really interested in like the things and the way that he was playing satire, and the things that he was writing about, because he did write quite a lot of that kind of stuff. So I thought, okay, well, what's the kind of theatre that I like and enjoy and I'd want to make, but also the kind of theatre and performance that would suit this. So I thought of kimishibai. For anybody who doesn't know what kimishibai is, kimishibai is a Japanese, I believe, or potentially, we're just going to say Asian, because I'm not having the balls to commit to the fact that I'm pretty sure it's Japanese. It's an old form of storytelling where traditionally somebody would go around cycling and they'd have a box on the back of their bicycle, and they'd go to towns and they'd tell stories, primarily to children. But in the box, they'd have various different beautifully decorated slats that were the images that went alongside the stories. And it would kind of be, kind of think about like a primitive performance version of like a graphic novel. And often kimishibai would have, they'd be short stories and they'd have a moral. But in more recent times, they're kind of like a nice little performance way and a graphic way into the idea of comedy and satire. And I know the artist Gemma Khan did an amazing show, The Epicene Butcher, which was just massively satirical and massively just brilliant and beautiful and funny. So my show is it's a series of kimishibai. It's in the style of kimishibai, right? We have a box, we have the slats with the beautiful artwork, and it's stories not only from his life but also from his works. So it's little skits, basically, but they are told through storytelling and animated storytelling.
Is it like this is not very arty at all, but like you know the Jack Black Goosebumps film where like the books he writes have like come into life? Is it a little bit like that?
I haven't seen it, but I don't think so from that description. Oh, I think it's just a collection of short stories, but the through line of all of these stories, because usually they can be quite disjointed or separated. They're just different stories. But I want the through line to be this man. And I was trying to think, you know, part of me is considering you've got the storyteller with the box, and then you've got the drunken John there, and he's the one who tells the story of his life whilst this storyteller is trying to tell the satire, or the other way around. I couldn't quite figure out which to do. So you've got this narrative that is a dynamic character like relationship between these two characters, but also they've got their ideas. And I think that if I was to do this show, I would make sure that it was adapted to reflect whatever we wanted, because his life was so full and rich, and he was a very prolific writer. So there are so many stories, and like, it's one of those, oh, he's gone to prison and then he comes out and he's a doctor, and then he's gone to this place and he's done that and he's gone to this place, and like, it's quite wild. And I think there are lots of stories in there where you could sit there and go, okay, well, currently in the zeitgeist, we are discussing themes of this, there is a John story. And so I wanted to kind of create this idea of a load of short stories that have your through line of John. They can be played wherever. And yeah, it's a two-handed kimishibai of John's stories.
By the way, I did just want to say, first thing, Gem, I looked it up for you, and you don't want to worry, you can confidently say kimishibai is Japanese.
Brilliant, because I know that throughout China they've got a very similar concept, but it is called something else, and I panicked for a second. So thank you, Joe.
Well, it's because the whole thing originates from the 8th century Buddhist temples, where they would often use pictorial scrolls to display the stories that they were telling.
Mm.
And but the actual art of kimishibai really becomes popular around kind of 1930s Tokyo and beyond.
Yeah, and they would often carry sweets with them as well. So then that like the kids would pay the tuppence for a story and a sweet kind of thing. Not a tuppence, but
it's amazing version. That Joe just knows this stuff off the top of his head, isn't it?
Yeah.
I already said I was on the online encyclopedia, Sean. I was there already. All I had to do was use the search engine portion of it.
So yeah, that's my pitch. So we've had Sean's Blackadder the Third, but with Boris Johnson. Joe's mock Edwardian farce of that's basically House meets Blackadder. It's fantastic. And then my kimishibai of John's stories. So now we're going to cut to the smush.
So, I feel like the last 2 weeks, admittedly, Jem, week one, we both had smush ideas. Last week, I presented a smush. So I'm just interested to know, Sean, do you have a smush thought?
You know, I don't like this bit. I really don't like this
Look,
bit.
No is an acceptable answer here. I just didn't want to feel like I was, you know, kind of taking up your airtime.
No, yeah. No, I just don't like this bit. I always feel like, oh, you're ruining this.
What, by forcing it to be more than
one
thing?
Yeah, a little bit. Last week, I was all right with it because it was like I needed a narrative for my show anyway. So you were like, just have that. This week though, they're so different. That I wouldn't want. I don't want to touch yours because I really would like to watch that show of like just a dude pretending to be a doctor in France
in the 1700s.
And the backdrop is just dead bodies.
I kind of like the
rising.
Idea that slowly throughout the play as well, as more and more characters go to visit him, that he like every time they do. Because earlier on this, it also states that one of his earlier publishings was a new analysis of the Bristol waters, together with the cause of diabetes and hectic, and their cure as it results from those waters.
It could be a musical like Sweeney Todd.
Yeah. In my head, basically what happens is, like, wasn't it tapeworms that House kept saying everyone had tapeworms?
Lupus.
Lupus, sorry. Don't know why I thought it was tapeworm. But I think it's basically this guy, basically, anytime someone comes to visit him, he diagnoses them with diabetes and then somehow still manages to kill them.
Yeah.
So it's just as the play goes on, more and more of the rep cast are just piled up, hidden behind the furniture.
I genuinely like the idea that it's like you've got the gauze at the back of the stage and it's backlit and it's these bodies piling up. But what I like more about that is that some production assistant has had to go place an order for 100 like mannequins, or not even mannequins, like 100 CPR dolls, and justify, oh, can I have like 300? I'll take just 100.
Yeah, we'll make yeah 100 but I feel dollars. Like if you're putting that much of an order in, I feel like if you go that, what's the number where that's creepy? Because I feel like if you're ordering 300 of something, then there's a clear purpose. And if you're ordering one of those, there's a clear purpose. There's a number in between there where it is dodgy.
I feel like it's if you're going off like fives and tens. So it's like if you order 150
Seven.
Mannequins, that's weird. That's fine. If you're ordering 160 mannequins, that's a little weird. If you're ordering 162 mannequins precisely,
I was thinking
that's when it gets strange.
See, I was thinking if you're ordering like 37, it's like, why 37? Why haven't you just rounded up to 40?
I think you can also
when it's a precise number, that's when it's weird.
Yeah.
You can also make it weird by being like, I'm not ordering it at a company email. It's at hotmail.co.uk.
Oh no, I'd set up a guerrilla mail just to order these mannequins.
Oh my goodness. And then you've also got to sit there and like have the discussion quite literally as a director of like, when these bodies like flop up, like flop behind the gauze? Do they flop? Do they splat? Like, what kind of... What rigidity do we want these bodies to be at? And also, yeah. Does the production assistant then, when they're ordering the bodies, do they have to confirm if the bodies will splat or rattle to give you that kind of effect that you're after?
Okay, so with this in mind, because I think it would be too easy for us to say all three of our ideas are good, let's let all three of them exist. That would be the coward's way out for this. I'm going to present something.
And if you like the coward's way out, why don't you follow us at Linktree?
No, okay, so I have... One of my biggest struggles over the last couple of years has been that I kind of disagree with the idea of art about coronavirus.
Yes, I agree.
Because I'm not ready yet to have nostalgia for the times I'm living in, and especially not for the last few years.
Yeah.
But I kind of want to make this that.
Really?
I think we find a way to take the spirit of this kind of, like,
no,
dark medical farce of mine.
You can't have... It's Boris Johnson piling up the bodies.
Oh, it's Boris Johnson piling up the bodies.
Oh my gosh, and the Kimishi Baya, all of the stories of the times where people had to say goodbye whilst Boris Johnson was partying.
Yep. Oh, you've all got there already. This is my way of trying to whimsically display the near criminal levels of neglect that this government has portrayed.
I mean...
Through a combination of Kimishi Baya, Edwardian farce.
There you go. We've got farce and, like, gentrification.
Oh, and I can just imagine it. Every time he comes back from, like, the backdrop, he just comes out and scruffs up his hair, like, and he just, like, hello.
I have a way that isn't going to, like, make us hurl, but I don't think it's better. So
it might not be better, but it might allow you to sleep at night.
So, no, I think, oh no, I know, I think my brain's just gone, that's better, because you're genuinely angry and you have not yet expressed it, and it's just like leaking your idea into mine. Because I was like, oh yeah, short stories, and like in the style of Blackadder, and like this idea of this mock Edwardian farce, and they're about Boris Johnson, which is basically what you've just said, but like the PC version of giving, that's what you put in the brochure to get an audience, but then the truth of the matter is what you've said, Joe.
You know what I think?
Go on.
Like over 700,000 billion pounds, we should write this episode off.
No. Oh, gosh.
And to follow us on... And if you head over to Linktree /OFITD, you can follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. And don't forget to like, share, and subscribe this YouTube channel.
I feel like Sean, like, suddenly in the close is going to leave anybody, including Joe and I, who's listening, going like, what the hell's happening? You're like embodying how we've experienced the last 2 years. Well done. Joe, look up the article that we're going to do for the next episode. And Sean, get back to your spiel.
Yeah. Easiest place to go, Linktree. It's in the description. You know, please share. You know, please like. You know, whatever you're listening on, whatever you're doing. You know, it helps the numbers, apparently. That's why it's so low. Okay. Yay. And if you want to follow me on Instagram, it's still ShawneeB. Hey, Gemma, where can people follow you on the social media?
I'm going to tell them in a second, but I'm going to say, Sean, you've got to have a little bit more Boris Johnson-style confidence.
Okay, sorry,
In this podcast.
Hey,
come on.
Hey,
there you
guys.
Go.
Hey, guys.
For anyone listening rather than watching.
Watch the podcast, listen to the podcast, like, share, and subscribe. Whiff, waff, woo. I need some slogans. Get podcasts done. Woo! What other ones has he got?
Build theatre pitch back.
Build theatre pitch back better.
Let's just all clap for our podcast.
Podcast level up. Leveling up the podcast. That's a new one, isn't it?
We give 350 million a year to the EU. Couldn't we give that money to theatre pitch?
And if you do want to give that kind of money to Theatre Pitch, then go to our link tree, or go. You can find me on Instagram at OFITD_Gem with a J, so JEM. Joe.
And if you want to find me online, you can do so at Not Joe Ronchka. That's NotJoeRacZka. You can find me there on Twitter and Instagram. I wouldn't recommend following me on Instagram. But hey, come and chat to me on Twitter and we can talk about our favourite failings of the current government.
Yep.
But you know what's not going to be a failing? Next week's episode, because we've got a doozy. Do you want to know what it is?
I'm scared. What is it? I don't. What if we say no? What if, like...
You're just like, no, I don't want to know. That case, I'd tell you at the beginning of next week's episode and you'd both be as prepared as me.
Improv off.
All right, so next week we are talking about Chakil.
Who? What?
Chakil, also known as Oblivnoy, is an uninhabited island off the Bay of Baku in Azerbaijan. The island forms part of the Baku archipelago, which consists of the following islands: Boyuk, Jira, Dash Jira, Kum Island, or Peshani, Zenbil, Sangi Mugan, Chakil, Karasu, Karajira, Gil, Ignat Dash, and a few smaller ones.
I've occasionally found myself like accidentally stepping into like Hebrew classes and different language classes and like Italian classes and stuff, and I'm like, I don't understand what's going on. I've just had flashbacks. Thank you.
You know what, Gemma? I know where Baku is. I know.
Yeah, it's off the coast of Azerbaijan.
Yeah, it's where they do the racing. It's got this really horrible left-hand corner called the castle. It's really tight. It's horrible.
Okay.
Is this another callback to your days on Sega Rally?
No. This is Formula One.
This is F1.
Okay.
This is Formula One. It's a really horrible corner.
Anyway, thank you everybody and anybody who has been listening or watching. I hope you've enjoyed all of the love for Hugh Laurie this episode, and Blackadder and Farce, and dipping our toes into Japanese ancient storytelling techniques. So, gosh, one day we're going to actually have to pitch to how we end this podcast.
Yeah, and one day we might actually be really professional at this point.
Yeah.